Welcome to this podcast for Exploring Anatomy, the Human Abdomen. This podcast is going to outline the small intestines. So the small intestines can be divided into three parts, the duodenum, jejunum and ileum. And these three parts are primarily responsible for the absorption of nutrients from the ingested food. The small intestines extend from the pylorus of the stomach to the cecum at the ileocecal junction. So let's start by detailing the duodenum. It is approximately 25 centimetres long and assumes a C-shaped course which surrounds the head of the pancreas, and it is continuous with the jejunum at the duodeno-jejunal junction. Along this course, the duodenum can be divided into four parts: a superior first part, then a descending second part, a horizontal third part, and finally ascending fourth part. Now, most of these four parts are retroperitoneal, positioned between the posterior abdominal wall and the peritoneum. The only exception is the proximal portion of the first part, and we'll look at that in a moment. So let's detail these four parts. The first, or superior part of the duodenum, is the direct continuation of the stomach, and it extends slightly upwards and to the right. It is about 5 centimetres long and lies anterolateral to the body of the first lumbar vertebra. The majority of the first part is retroperitoneal, and only its anterior surface has a covering of peritoneum. The first couple of centimetres, however, is mobile due to it being suspended by the two omenta. This initial part is known as the duodenal ampulla, or cap, and superiorly is suspended from the liver by the hepatoduodenal ligament. Remember, this is part of the lesser omentum. Inferiorly, it has the descending layer of the greater omentum hanging from it. The second, or descending part of the duodenum, is slightly longer and extends downwards along the right sides of the first to third lumbar vertebra. It curves around the head of the pancreas. This second part is completely retroperitoneal and does not contain a mesentery. At its posteromedial aspect, there is the hepatopancreatic ampulla, and this is a small dilation formed by the union of both the major pancreatic and bile ducts. This ampulla empties both the pancreatic juice and bile into the duodenum through a small opening, the major duodenal papilla. Slightly superior to the major duodenal papilla is the minor duodenal papilla, and this marks the entrance of the minor pancreatic duct. The hepatopancreatic ampulla is a major landmark as it demarcates the end of the foregut and the beginning of the midgut, and importantly, this marks a transition of blood vessels which supply the duodenum. We'll look at these later on. The third part of the duodenum runs horizontally across the inferior vena cava, the aorta, and the third lumbar vertebra, and therefore crosses from the right side to the left. It has the superior mesenteric vessels lying anterior to it. The fourth ascending part of the duodenum extends upwards along the left margin of the aorta to the inferior border of the pancreas, where it then turns anteriorly to merge with the jejunum at the duodeno-jejunal junction. This junction is supported by a suspensory muscle known as the ligament of Treitz, with a small slip of muscle from the diaphragm meeting a fibromuscular band from the duodenum. This ligament of Treitz, or the suspensory muscle, is believed to aid the movement of food through the intestines by widening the duodeno-jejunal angle. The internal mucosa of the duodenum is thrown into a series of circular folds known as plicae circularis, and it also has an abundance of microvilli. It differs from the jejunum and ileum by containing Brunner glands, and these secrete an alkaline mucus which protects the duodenum from the acidic chyme that's passed into the duodenum from the stomach. This brings the pH to the level at which the pancreatic enzymes are most effective. So let's just have a look at the blood supply to the duodenum. And as I mentioned previously, the major duodenal papilla is the landmark for the division between the foregut and midgut. This means that the duodenum is going to receive its arterial supply from both the celiac trunk and the superior mesenteric artery. The proximal portion of the duodenum is therefore supplied by the superior pancreatico-duodenal artery, and this is a branch of the gastroduodenal. The gastroduodenal comes from the celiac trunk. The distal portion of the duodenum is supplied by the inferior pancreatico-duodenal artery, and this is a direct branch of the superior mesenteric artery. These pancreatico-duodenal arteries are found along the medial surface of the duodenum and the head of the pancreas, and supply both of these structures by forming numerous anastomoses. It is important to recognise this transitional area between the foregut and midgut, and realise that all structures within the midgut are now going to be supplied by the superior mesenteric artery. The venous drainage of the duodenum is going to follow the same course as the arteries, with these veins draining into the portal system via the splenic or superior mesenteric veins. Now let's have a look at the jejunum and the ileum. The jejunum and ileum are the two distal parts of the small intestine. The jejunum is the direct continuation of the duodenum at the duodeno-jejunal junction, and is where the small intestine regains its mesentery and becomes intraperitoneal. Approximately halfway along the course of the small intestines, the jejunum becomes the ileum. The ileum then extends to the cecum and forms the ileocecal junction. In the cadaver, there are no external features which can demarcate the transition from jejunum to ileum. But in the living person, we can see that the jejunum is a deeper red owing to its greater vascularity. It has thicker walls, a wider lumen, and an increased amount of fat in the mesentery. The ileum is paler pink with thinner walls and a narrower lumen and has lower amounts of fat in the mesentery. Internally, and like the duodenum, the internal mucosa of the jejunum and ileum is thrown into a series of circular folds. The jejunum, however, have taller, larger folds and are more closely packed, and these are more closely packed together. The ileum has few of these, and at the very distal part of the ileum, they're actually absent. So now let's turn to the mesentery, which anchors the jejunum and ileum to the posterior abdominal wall. It is fan-shaped, and its root runs obliquely from the duodeno-jejunal junction, which is the left of the second lumbar vertebra, to the ileocecal junction at the level of the right sacroiliac joint. As the mesentery's root passes obliquely across the infracolic compartment, it crosses the fourth and third parts of the duodenum, the abdominal aorta, the inferior vena cava, the right ureter, the right psoas muscle, and the gonadal vessels. Running within the mesentery, between its two layers, are the superior mesenteric vessels, autonomic fibres, lymph nodes, and variable amounts of fat. As both the jejunum and ileum are part of the midgut, they're going to be supplied by branches from the superior mesenteric artery. As the superior mesenteric artery runs along the posterior abdominal wall and then into the mesentery, it sends approximately 15 to 20 branches which radiate to the left and supply the jejunum and ileum. We have jejunal and ileal arteries, and as they approach the small intestine, they unite to form arterial loops, and these are known as arcades. These arcades then run alongside the small intestine, giving rise to a series of straight arteries called vasa recta. The arcades that supply the jejunum form large loops with long straight vasa recta. But as the jejunum becomes ileum, these arcades become shorter and they give off very short vasa recta. The venous drainage of the jejunum and ileum mirrors that of the arterial supply, with jejunal and ileal veins draining into the portal system via the superior mesenteric vein. The autonomic innervation of the small intestine predominantly arises from the superior mesenteric plexus, and this is a collection of autonomic nerves around the superior mesenteric artery. Sympathetic fibres coming from this plexus will reduce gastrointestinal motility and also vasoconstrict the jejunal and ileal arteries. Parasympathetic fibres will promote gastrointestinal motility and vasodilation and will increase the level of digestion. Parasympathetic input to the superior mesenteric plexus is via the vagus nerve, and sympathetic input is via the greater, lesser and least splanchnic nerves from the sympathetic trunk. So with that brief description of the autonomic nerves, I'll finish the podcast here.